You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
In San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, Tesla shares jump after better-than-expected results showing the car maker is getting production back on track. Tesla making more EVs in June than any other month in the company's history. We'll dig into the numbers. Plus, Netflix shares rally big time after the streaming giant lost only 1 million instead of 2 million subscribers. Could this big shift in investor sentiment buoy markets as earnings roll out over the next few weeks? We will dig in. And it is game on for FaZe Clan, the influencer marketing house that counts Snoop Dogg as a board member. Just went public via SPAC. Why now? We'll ask the CEO. Sticking with Tesla, I want to bring in Steve Wesley, Wesley Group founder and managing partner, also former longtime member of Tesla's board. Steve, I know you're liking what you see here. Investors seem a little lukewarm. What are you thinking?
Well, look, it's great news for Tesla and Tesla investors. Everybody thought it's going to be a soft quarter. We knew there were supply chain issues combined with COVID closing the China facility for 22 days. And we saw 254,000 units delivered, 50,000 increase year over year. That's 40% growth. But the big surprise was revenue and profitability. They hit $16.93 billion. That's 40% year over year growth. But the biggest news is largest car deliveries in history in June, which says they're really ramping up to the back end of the year. I think they're on track to deliver 340,000 units in Q3. I think they're going to hit 500,000 in Q4. If they do that, it'll be closer to 50 to 60% growth. Keep in mind, analysts were predicting profitability of about $1.81. They hit $2.27. So they're on track for record deliveries, record profits. Simply put, Tesla's got manufacturing capability and supply chain relationships no one else has. Someday, they may not be king of the hill, but for the next year or two, they're looking awful strong.
Now, they didn't change their production forecast. They've made 564,000 vehicles so far this year. They say they'll make 1.5 million. Can they really make twice as many vehicles as they made in the first half of the year and the second half of the year?
Without a doubt, and here's why. Most of the other car companies, General Motors, Ford, they have one electric plant that's going online, maybe another one in 2 or 3 years. Tesla now has four plants up and running in California, Austin, Shanghai, and Berlin. And all four are running. Austin and Berlin are going to be pumping into big numbers by the tail end of the year. But that's only part of the story. The other key part that investors should understand is the biggest component in electric cars is the battery. Tesla was the first to bring battery production in-house. With their new 4680 technology, they appear to be the technology leader. They're taking the cost curve batteries down faster than anybody else. And on top of that, they're the leaders of providing what's called OTA or over-the-air software services that are dropping bigger profits to the bottom line. And again, the big story is profitability was way beyond what analysts saw. And I know a lot of people say, this Tesla stock price is crazy. This is an anomaly at how capital markets work. But the fact is, if you're growing 50% a year from these big numbers, $53.6 billion to what I think is going to be $86 billion, and you're more profitable than any other competitor in the market, you're going to have a share price that's the envy of the industry.
A big story just crossed from our Bloomberg Autos team, including our own at Ludlow, that Ford is planning to cut 8,000 jobs out of the, you know, gas-powered side of the business, in part to fund the EV side of the business. And look, Jim Farley's been very serious about taking on Tesla and also his admiration for Tesla. How well-positioned is Tesla compared to Ford, compared to Rivian and Lucid?
Look, Americans want to know how well GM and Ford and Lucid and Rivian are doing, but to be honest, they're behind. They came late to the game. They should have started years ago. Keep in mind, General Motors has been making electric cars for 11 years now, and they were only able to make 25,000 last year compared to Tesla's 925,000. So they've got a long way to go. They need to kick it into higher gear. That having been said, Rivian makes a great truck, but they too are laying people off. They've taken their production numbers down to 25,000, while Tesla's ramping their predictions up to 1.5 million. The real people to look at are Volkswagen. They saw the writing on the wall. Herbert Diess has been a leader in the sector. He took battery production in-house early with Northvolt. They've got deep pockets, factories on multiple continents, and then there's the Chinese. Most Americans have never heard of a Chinese auto company, but know this, BYD, Li Peng, XPeng, and others are going to, Li Auto and XPeng are going to be coming to market 23, 24. Here's why they're tough. One, they're moving faster than virtually any other auto company except Tesla. Two, the Chinese are really subsidizing battery and auto costs. Three, they make pretty darn good cars. So expect the global competition. It's good for the consumer, but there's going to be a shakeout here. 30 new electric vehicle companies have come into the market the last 24 months. We may be heading into a recession. More cars, fewer buyers. We'll see who ends up on top. But keep an eye on Tesla, Volkswagen, and the Chinese.
But is the China problem going to go away? I mean, you've still got this 21-day lockdown, quarantine, in Shanghai, and you've just got the unpredictability of an ongoing pandemic where the Chinese government could once again crack down and make production there difficult.
Well, look, there are two big China issues out there. One is the COVID one. And what the Chinese do that others just can't for labor law reasons is the Chinese bring the entire workforce, 8,000 people in-house, and they will sequester them for weeks at a time so they don't get exposed. So I think the COVID issue gets solved. The bigger issue is the long-term geopolitical issue. Is Xi Jinping, who was just reconfirmed as the new chairman of China, has said he intends to reunify or invade Taiwan at some point. If you ever see something like that happen, China has a huge part of its production capacity. Tesla has in China. So there's a lot of issues to solve for. But right now, what investors need to look at, who's selling the most and who's growing the fast, the answer to that question is Tesla. Who's getting the smartest in bringing battery costs down and doing more, selling more over-the-air software services? The answer to that's Tesla. But these aren't big secrets. Volkswagen, Chinese, others will catch up. It's going to be a question of who's fleetest of foot. Time to buckle up.
How big a problem is the Twitter saga? Doesn't seem like Twitter's going to let this go away. And obviously, Tesla investors haven't been necessarily pleased about the commitments Elon Musk made. Now he's trying to pull out of them. What do you think?
Yeah, look, Tesla and Elon are a master making great cars. I hope they stay focused on that. I think Twitter's been a diversion. And I think the more they can stay focused on executing, whoever wins the electric car race is going to own a 50-year franchise. So you're going to need to keep your eye on the ball. Tesla's sitting pretty now, but a lot of serious people are coming after you. So we'll have to be on our toes. And I hope Tesla's up to the task. I want to see an American company win.
All right. Wesley Koop, founder and managing partner, Steve. Wesley, thank you, as always, for your insights. Coming up, after Twitter wins round one, fast-tracking its suit against Elon Musk, what's coming in round two? Ali Rogani, Y Combinator managing partner, and the former CFO and COO of Twitter will share his view of the saga and the recent market meltdown next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Fast forward to October, that's when Twitter and Elon Musk will officially face off in Delaware court. Will Twitter succeed in forcing Musk to do the deal? And if so, is that actually good for Twitter? For more insight into all of this, I want to bring in Ali Rogani, Y Combinator, managing partner and former Twitter CFO and COO. So Ali, what's your take? Twitter won round one. That means they've potentially got the upper hand in round two. Is that good for the company?
Well, I think it's good for Twitter shareholders, you know, especially seeing the sell-off in technology stocks over the past couple of months. I think the deal is very richly valued in today's terms. And, you know, I actually expect Twitter to prevail in court. I think that the agreement is pretty ironclad as I read it. And Twitter's lawsuit is very clear. I think, you know, if you read it, you feel pretty, I think, find it pretty compelling that Musk had agreed to buy the company even in the case of a market downturn. So I think this is going to go in Twitter's direction, which I think is good for Twitter shareholders. But, you know, my own personal view, as I said last time I was on your program, is I'm not sure it's good for Twitter, the service, because I don't think that, you know, Twitter being owned by a single person, particularly one whose public statements have kind of indicated a lack of a deep understanding of the way the platform works, particularly in areas of trust and abuse. I'm not sure that's good for Twitter, the service. So that's my personal view. And it's been pretty consistent over time.
So let's game this out and talk a little bit more about why. Let's say Musk is forced to do the deal. He owns Twitter. He could turn right around and sell it. You know, that is also a possibility. If he is forced to do this deal, then what do you think happens?
It's very awkward to force someone to buy something that they are saying they don't want. And I don't know how he reacts. I mean, I think one thing that Elon has proven is that he's quite unpredictable and quite, you know, extreme sometimes in what he wants to do. So your guess is as good as mine, you know, if he's forced to buy Twitter. You know, probably what happens, if I were to just speculate, is that it will lead to some kind of renegotiation where he has some kind of face-saving outcome where he can claim he was happy and he becomes a happy buyer again. Because I don't think he's going to be able to get out of this. I'm not a lawyer, but my read of the documents, that's what I believe. I don't think he's going to get out of this. Maybe there's a compromise where he pays a little bit less for it, or the terms are altered in some way or another, where he ends up magically being a happy buyer again, and we'll see what he does. I would be surprised, and I think it would be a terrible outcome for probably everyone involved, if he buys it and then turns around and looks for a new buyer. I think probably he would take a bath on a transaction like that. But in any case, look, I don't, my view of Twitter is it's too important a company to be a like a little hot potato that's jumping from, you know, one person's hands to another, or going private and going public, et cetera. You know, if he buys it, I hope he has, you know, serious enough about really making the platform better and helping it to reach its true, true potential. I think that's everyone's hope. And I still, you know, have my fingers crossed that that somehow happens.
So part of the reason this is a, you know, quote unquote good deal for Twitter shareholders is because the market has plummeted. Obviously, putting on your Y Combinator hat, and, you know, obviously, you know, you've been the CFO of big public companies. You know, how bad is this for Silicon Valley? How lasting is this downturn? And what does it look like as an inflection point when we look back a decade from now?
Yeah, great question. I think it's important to put it into the right historical context. I mean, we went through a really remarkable period in 2020 and 2021 in terms of technology stocks, where the COVID, sort of the changes in the COVID economy really benefited a lot of tech stocks. And there was a feeling that like everything was moving into the internet immediately. And we saw a really historic run-up in technology stocks with stocks trading at multiples that had kind of never been seen before. And so everyone was expecting a correction, perhaps not one that was as rapid and severe is what we've seen, but everyone was expecting a correction. And that's what we've seen. So, you know, I think there are a number of companies, great technology companies, recent IPOs like DoorDash or Datadog. They're just wonderful companies, and I think they've been oversold. That's my personal view. But I think if you zoom out, my expectation is that this will be like other things, you know, like other recessions and times of market, you know, turbulence, will be seen as just another one, perhaps one where the slope downward is a little sharper, but nothing that fundamentally alters the view that technology is changing our society and that technology companies that are driving that change will be valuable, and that there are many of more of them to come. You know, in our portfolio, companies like Stripe and Brex, those are some of the public stocks that are Y Combinator companies. But, you know, the Stripes, the Brexes, the Fairs, Gusto, et cetera, there are a lot more amazing companies that have great businesses that, you know, will continue to be disruptive and will continue to be really amazing assets for investors to own.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Stripe, because obviously they've been in the news for sort of an internal revaluation. Paul Graham, the co-founder of Y Combinator, has this essay called Default Dead, Default Alive. Who do you think survives? Who do you think dies in this downturn? And how is that informing your investment decisions now?
So this may surprise you, but almost every company, private company that, you know, has a reputation, you know, that people on your program will have probably heard of, I think they all survive. And the reason is the markets have been so frothy over the past few years that almost every promising technology company in the mid to late stages is extremely well capitalized. I mean, these are companies that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars. And yeah, there have been some downsizing and some adjustments. But in most cases, those were done not because the companies were under duress, but because they said, hey, this is an opportunity for us to right size the business a little bit, given the economic climate, everyone will understand and lengthen our runway. So I don't expect for, you know, mid to late stage private companies for there to be a bloodbath at all. I expect modest belt tightening, but almost all these companies are going to just continue to invest in growth.
Interesting. That's a more optimistic view than we've heard. Ali Raghani, managing partner at Y Combinator, also the former CFO and COO of Twitter. Great to have your thoughts here on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Apple is arguing that it is now a major force in healthcare. The iPhone maker has published an almost 60-page report outlining all of its health features and partnerships with various medical institutions. Though the Apple Watch dominates the market, the device hasn't always gotten new health features as quickly as its competitors. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman here to tell us more. Mark, tell us what is in this report.
So this is a nearly 60-page report, and I rarely see Apple do things like this. Typically, when they want to tout their initiatives, they make a new website for it. They put out an event or a video of some sort. But this is more of an academically focused report. It's not for consumers. That really showcases all the health and fitness and workout-related features, you know, as we all know and use across the iPhone and the Apple Watch and the rest of its ecosystem. It dives deep into how all the features work. They talk about some of their research studies. They have sleep studies, they have walking studies, they have heart studies, and how all of that works together, complete in concert with different medical institutions and medical partners they have, you know, globally to produce new features for their products.
That's what I thought. I can't remember a time that Apple has done this previously. You know, what does this say about their plans for the future? I mean, that's what we want to know, is how will, you know, health tech increasingly be integrated into all of my Apple devices?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think that health functionality will really spread to all of Apple's future products. I mean, don't forget the AirPods, upcoming virtual reality headset, future augmented reality glasses. You're going to see some health integration probably in all of those products at some point. Maybe one day your AirPods will be able to tell you your heart rate, right, or your body temperature. Maybe you'll have some health workout functionality related to Apple's headset, just like Meta has with its Oculus Move feature on its VR and AR headsets. Right? So the Apple future of health is very strong. This year, they're going to add a body temperature sensor to the Apple Watch. Two new Apple Watch models with that feature tell you if you have a fever or other things going on. There'll be new women's health features tied to the new hardware this fall. Specifically, by 2024, 2025, Apple wants to release a blood pressure feature for the Apple Watch, something that Samsung and others have had. But of course, Apple needs to get in that space too. And they're also very invested in an R&D project to bring blood sugar monitoring to the watch eventually as well.
Buying Peloton, or has Apple purposely let that ship sail?
I think the ship has sailed for sure on Apple buying Peloton, unless it gets to an absurdly low price and Apple finds a way to really integrate it. I don't think Peloton is necessary to Apple. If Apple wanted, it could start producing bikes and treadmills at a far cheaper cost than what it would take to buy Peloton, unless there is a fire sale at some point. I also think they'd rather integrate their features into their existing ecosystem rather than add that really expensive business that fitness hardware would be.
All right. Mark Gurman, as always, covers Apple and Peloton for us. Thanks, Mark.
If there was a single thing, we might say Stranger Things. But again, we're talking about, you know, losing 1 million instead of losing 2 million. So, you know, tough in some ways, losing a million and calling it success. But, you know, really, we're set up very well for the next year.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. That was Netflix co-CEO Reed Hastings on the earnings call. I'm going to get to the Netflix relief rally after it overpromised on subscriber losses for the second quarter. James Chalkmok, partner at Clockwise Capital, joins us now to discuss. James, good to have you back here on the show. So turns out overpromising in this case was a good thing. But how good a thing? How confident are you that Netflix can continue to cut its losses?
I think it's going to be difficult. You know, they have a lot of battles to contend with. But I think when you look at the stock and the reaction, you know, what a difference, you know, a quarter or two makes. You know, we're seeing a big shift in the tone of the market. I mean, this Netflix was a company that only traded on subscriber growth. What's the sub number? What's the sub number? You know, that's pretty much was the singular metric that people looked at. Now you had a decline in subs and a downward guidance to the third quarter subs and the third quarter downward outlook. So the stock's up 7%. So there's clearly a shift in sentiment and a reprioritization of what the metrics, relevant metrics are. And it's increasingly looking like it's going to be monetization over the absolute number of subs.
So here's the question. The markets took a turn in part because of Netflix's big loss in subscribers 3 months ago, which was totally unprecedented. Do you think that this shift in sentiment will buoy markets through earnings over the next 6 weeks?
Near term, yeah, absolutely. I think the sentiment has become so bad and the bar is so low that you are going to see some level of relief. Obviously, we're not out of the woods as it relates to inflation, what the Fed's going to do. But I do think that these companies have come down way too much. And I think that what you're going to be seeing is an increasing appreciation for mean reversion in the growth rates. And what I mean by that is that, you know, these companies pulled, tech companies pulled forward so much demand during COVID. And then you had this growth drop off the last couple of quarters where it looked like, is this a structural change in the growth rates where demand is actually slowing? Or is this a mean reversion where we're just going to revert back to the original growth curve? And I think what people, our investors, are starting to increasingly appreciate is that we're just coming back to the original growth curve and that these companies can and will grow the way that we thought before COVID. And in some cases, like Amazon, like Microsoft, like Apple, potentially even better than they were before COVID. And as far as Netflix is concerned, you know, this is still a company, you know, the advertising is not easy. And you're contending with juggernauts like Amazon, like Facebook, like Google. And, and you think about the level of differentiation you have as a service versus them in order to targeting capabilities and whatnot. It's not that much. You know, we consider, we put Netflix in the bucket of old media, and it likely should be valued as such.
Interesting. So if the streaming wars are turning into an ad war, who wins? Mm-hmm. You know, obviously there's Netflix, there's HBO and Disney Plus that are also experimenting with advertisers. And then on the other side, you've got Facebook and Google, which has been doing this for a really long time, and Snap.
Yeah, I think that the big guys, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, will continue to command great share because of the fact that they are platforms which provide great stickiness for their customers and great targeting capabilities from the data that they collect. But I do think that it can become increasingly fragmented as other outlets explore their advertising capabilities in order to better monetize their businesses. But ultimately, you know, we see the likes of Amazon gaining a disproportionate share and Netflix having to contend with everybody else. And when you think about the data that they have, you know, how is it much more differentiated than what a linear television station has?
All right. Interesting view there. We will, of course, continue to cover all of this. James Chacmok, Clockwise Capital.
Thank you
for weighing in. Meantime, FaZe Clan is one of the biggest esports companies in the world, with 11 competitive teams in games like Counter-Strike and Fortnite. The company has officially started trading on the NASDAQ. FaZe Clan, a lifestyle brand, a gaming lifestyle brand that's now extremely popular with younger audiences and includes big personality streamers and content creators like Snoop Dogg, who's also on the company's board. CEO Lee Trink joins us now live from the NASDAQ. Lee, good to have you here on the big day. You know, everybody thought that the go public window has been slammed and sealed shut for the foreseeable future. Why did you decide to try to rip it open?
Well, first of all, thank you, Emily. Really appreciate you having me. Big day, great day for gaming, great day for Gen Z. And, you know, talking about Gen Z, the timing is actually prescient, because Gen Z is actually rising to power, not only as a cultural driver, like all youth generations are, but they're eclipsing their driver as just culture into changing how we transact, changing how they consume. And by the end of the decade, they're gonna have $33 trillion of spending power. And so what we're seeing is this ascendancy of Gen Z. I think that we typify that ascendancy as the first Gen Z native company to go public. And so I think the timing feels perfect.
Shares did drop some, you know, 25% or so. I mean, do you still think the timing is right?
The timing is definitely right. And the reality is this day is about the launch of a first Gen Z native company going public. It's not about the market conditions today. We're building value for the long term. You know, you check in with us at 12 months, at 18 months, at 24 months. We're building value for our community, for our shareholders, and we'll just be building for the long term.
FaZe is at the intersection of some really volatile industries, including esports and Web3. You know, talk to us about what makes this, you know, sort of cocktail, this place where you sit in business, so unique and potentially valuable.
So we really do sit at the intersection of technology and culture. That's really what we did starting in 2010, right? Gaming sits at the intersection of technology and culture. I don't think people understood that about gaming, that gaming is culture. Gaming culture has become youth culture overall, and we've been pioneers at that, and our plan is to continue to pioneer, and a great example of that is Web3, which also happens to be led and driven by culture at the moment. And so we've been positioning ourselves amongst all of the blue chip companies and brands within Web3, and we see our opportunity to bring the massive gaming community, which is not yet in Web3, we see the opportunity for us to build that bridge and usher in that massive gaming audience, not only our 500 million plus follower network, but the gaming community at large into what will be really a colossal part of our future that frankly will disrupt not only what you've seen so far in things like art, but Web3 is going to impact commerce overall. So we're positioned ourselves to bring our generation into that, and we see that as an amazing opportunity for us.
What don't investors understand yet about how Gen Z is really going to change things and how to capitalize on these trends?
So I think what we've seen so far is the way they consume content, right? They've moved away from the traditional traditional spaces of content, heavy on YouTube, heavy on internet, heavy on Twitch, and that's really the beginning of the change. That's not the totality of the change. Gen Z just demands something different from the brands that they support. Gen Z wants to be treated as a community, not a customer. At this point, I hesitate to always use the word customer because it almost feels pejorative from the Gen Z lens. And I think that the majority of traditional companies don't really understand it. They don't understand that sea change. They don't understand that Gen Z is rising to power in a different way. You know, again, by the end of the decade, to have $33 trillion in buying power. Another sign of this is that in this election is, you know, we're seeing the first Gen Z candidates for Congress, and so there's a massive sea change coming. I think a lot of companies are not quite prepared for the amount of change that's required to treat their customers as their community. And you know, we speak the Gen Z language natively. We've been leading Gen Z on the culture side, and we're continuing to lead them on the commercial side as well.
All right, Lee Trink, FaZe Clan CEO, we will continue to watch y'all.
Thanks for having me.
Take off. Thank you. Meantime, Tesla earnings call still underway. Musk stating that the company has the potential for record-breaking output in the second half of this year. Again, it would have to be record-breaking if they're going to make their own targets. Plus, he says the Tesla Cybertruck is on track to debut next year. 2023. We're going to continue to listen in and bring you the headlines as we have them. Coming up, Sam Bankman-Fried's growing empire. We're going to talk about the crypto billionaire's spending spree and his intentions behind it, all in the middle of a very cold crypto winter. That is next. This is Bloomberg.
At the very least, I want to be doing something net positive, like with the making money perk. I want to be a good actor there.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication.
Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It is time now for our crypto report as we take a look at one of the most prominent figures in the industry, and that is FTX founder and CEO Sam Bankman-Fried. Over the span of 2 weeks in June, the crypto billionaire bought two companies, propped up the crypto platform BlockFi, and tried to save another, Voyager Digital, with a large loan. In all, he committed about $1 billion, all in the midst of a crypto rout that has wiped $2 trillion in market value out in just 8 months. Let's bring in Hannah Miller now for more on today's big take. Hannah, thank you. It is just fascinating to see, just how ambitious and seemingly successful SBF has seemed to be. But there are competing views of him within the industry. Is he more of the messiah or is he a shark?
Yes, no, you have people calling Sam Bankman-Fried the patron saint of crypto, that he is bailing out the industry, swooping in as a white knight to save struggling companies. And then on the other hand, you have people really seeing him as a robber baron consolidating power and control over the industry.
So SBF spoke at our Bloomberg Crypto Summit this week. I want to take a quick listen to what he had to say.
Certainly the asset, price decline was a strong sign that in crypto and frankly in a lot of fintech, things were way too light on use cases and that there was a lot of hand waving going on, both on use cases and on sort of financial modeling that was suspect.
Tell us a little bit more about his view on this market downturn. I mean, clearly he's more optimistic than the markets would suggest, but is he right?
Yes, no. He puts protecting customers above all else within this industry. He is looking to swoop in, help people out. He believes that this is an industry with extremely strong long-term prospects. While he sees opportunity in terms of buying up companies, bailing out others, he thinks that by helping these companies, he can ensure that customers' assets remain safe.
Are you expecting his acquisition spree to continue? What's next?
Yeah, so we know that FTX and FTX US is, both these companies are focused on raising funding. We know that they're in talks with people. That's pretty unique because venture capitalists have really cooled down on the industry within the past few months in light of crypto winter. So it's pretty fascinating to see that he still has a lot of confidence. He can raise funds at high valuations. He's also eyeing assets at distressed companies and Bitcoin miners for acquisitions.
Meantime, you've got Elon Musk, who, at one point was also considered a sort of crypto savior, coming out and saying that Tesla sold 75% of its Bitcoin purchases, turned that into cash to improve its cash position. I mean, do you expect something like that to have, you know, a continued negative effect on the industry, or can the optimism of bulls like Sam Bankman-Fried win out?
Yeah, I think that Sam Bankman-Fried's support for the industry shows that, you know, there are people who have confidence in it. He also has his eyes outside of the crypto industry. He's talked about, you know, even joked around about buying Goldman Sachs. And we've also reported that he was eyeing a potential takeover of Robinhood. So he sees mainstream finance blurring with crypto. And while big names like Elon Musk may be dampening a little bit on their enthusiasm for the industry, it seems like those within it have the confidence to branch out beyond it and are still confident about its long-term prospects.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'm sure there are many more twists and turns to come. Bloomberg's Hannah Miller with this week's Big Take. Thank you. The pandemic has, of course, changed how we look at healthcare, and the digital health landscape was a booming industry through COVID-19. But where are we now? Let's take a look at the future of health tech with Dina Shakir, a partner at Lux Capital. Obviously, there's been a lot of optimism about the future of healthcare technology, in part accelerated by the pandemic. But we've also seen some of these companies like Cerebral, a string of other companies that have had layoffs coupled with this downturn. How optimistic or how bright is the future really?
Bottom line is, I'm still incredibly bullish, as are we at Lux. Healthcare is fundamentally recession-proof. Mm-hmm. Human health will always continue to be a big sector. Humans are not going anywhere anytime soon. We'll continue to give birth, we'll continue to get sick, and we'll continue to die. And while the pandemic may have accelerated growth in certain areas, it's also sort of opened up a watershed of opportunity for the key stakeholders in the industry who have no choice but to undergo a digital transformation.
How is the downturn impacting the industry, impacting valuations? You know, I'm sure companies are struggling under the pressure of this.
Absolutely. There's no denying we are not immune from the macro at all. And certainly health tech in particular, given it is very services oriented, is keenly affected by it, particularly at the later stage. So we're seeing there's still a massive influx of funds that venture funds are raising focused on healthcare. In fact, SVB just released a report this morning documenting that. And I think it's on track to be the third highest year of venture fundraising in history. There has been a slowdown in terms of dollars deployed towards healthcare. So it's the later stage companies in particular that will see it's not quite the fundraising environment of 2021.
Apple just came out with, unique for Apple, a 60-page report detailing its role in the health tech industry. Is Apple going to own this industry as a device maker and an operating system?
You know, this has always been a big question for healthcare IT. Is it going to be Apple? Is it going to be Google? What role does Facebook play? I think it's no denying, and especially now with the Apple watches that we're all wearing, that there is a massive consumer trust in Apple and iOS, and that it will be very interesting to see how providers actually step up to integrating this data with their EMRs. I think if they can bridge that gap, there could be something very interesting
there. And last, you know, and I know this isn't necessarily a quick question, but obviously the overturning of Roe versus Wade, how does that change, you know, where you're thinking about putting your money and your view on this industry? So important to women's health.
You know, of course, we've been long-term investors in women's health, and fundamentally, women's health is population health. This overturning has been a very sad moment, not just for women, but for all of us. And it's also been a moment where employers are stepping up to the table, where we've seen major companies taking stands, funding the care of women to cross state lines if they need to receive the care that we need. One of our companies, Maven Clinic, is already serving nearly half of the Fortune 15 companies, and they've actually seen an increase month over month in terms of the inbound sales opportunities for companies who want to do more for their women and for their families, who want to address the maternal health crisis that we face in this country, where women today are 50% more likely to die in childbirth than our mothers before us. And that's 3 to 4x if you're Black or a woman of color.
CEO of Maven, which I obviously one of your companies was just on the show, and she talked about maternity deserts mm-hmm. and these pockets of places across the country that just don't have adequate care. Dina Shakir, Lux Capital, always great to have you here on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
For stopping by. We've been continuing to listen in to that Tesla earnings call. Elon Musk has been talking about his decision to sell the majority of the company's stake in Bitcoin, 75%. Take a listen to what he had to say.
The reason we sold a bunch of our Bitcoin holdings was that we were uncertain as to when the COVID lockdowns in China would alleviate. So it was important for us to maximize our cash position, given the uncertainty of the COVID lockdowns in China.
Musk also said he's open to increasing the company's Bitcoin position in the future, and he said he's holding on to his Doge. And that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. Tomorrow we're going to be speaking with AT&T CEO John Stankey. That'll be a big one. He'll be talking to us about earnings and the state of the wireless industry. And as always, don't forget to check out our podcast wherever you get your podcast. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.